From the Fancy Lady Cowgirl headquarters, welcome to the Cowgirl Problems Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to everyone who embodies the cowgirl or cowboy spirit, regardless of what you wear or where you live. The guests on this show are a little fancy, a little ranchy, and they all have a kick-ass story to tell. I'm your host, Courtney Dehoff. Join me for the ride. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Cowgirl Problems Podcast. My guest today is Ivan McClellan, and I am so pumped. I have followed Ivan on Instagram for a while, but I did not know much about his story. And the more I read about you, Ivan, the cooler you became. And so I am just so pumped that you're joining me today.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me on here.
Ivan, you're a photojournalist. I actually just saw a post via Wrangler that was sort of the defining moment of like, okay, I definitely have to get him on the podcast because I just really love your outlook on cowboys and the cowboy culture. But you've had, you know, essays featured in everything from ESPN. You've led creative projects for Nike, Adidas, Disney. I mean, you've got this really big, robust resume. But it all sort of started in Kansas City. And funnily enough, I am a Kansas girl myself. About 30 minutes out of Kansas City, but we call Kansas City home. So, you know, talk to me a little bit, I guess, just about your upbringing. Where did this all start for you?
Well, you know, Kansas City is, you know, I grew up in Kansas City, Kansas. Where are you from?
So Tonganoxie was my original address. Yep.
So it's Kansas City, you know, you drive a few minutes outside of the city and you're like on a ranch, you know, you're in the country. So Kansas City is just this weird mix where you have some of the things that you have in an urban setting. You know, we had a lot of traffic on our street. We had a lot of crime in the area that I grew up in. You know, my high school had like 2,000 kids that went there. Like, it was very urban, but we also lived on like a 6-acre plot of land, and we would run around in the field behind our house, and we would catch fireflies, and we would, you know, do all the stuff that you do out in the country. We'd also like chase each other around with blow torches that we made out of hairspray bottles and stuff like that. So I just had this really interesting upbringing where, like, I would help my friends down the street work on their lowriders, and then I would go and sing the national anthem at the American Royal, a big stock show in downtown Kansas City. And so I was, like, familiar with rodeos, and I was familiar with, you know, like, black cowboys, which is the focus of my work. I had a friend named Courtney that spelled her name the same as yours, and her dad had cows, and he raised them on their land, and we would go over to her house, and I always just thought it was strange. I was like, why do you guys have these cows? But I never, like, called him a cowboy, you know? So It was, the stuff was around. My family definitely grew up rural. They grew up with cows and chickens and goats and have stories, and you know, they would go to the outhouse. They didn't have running water in their house, and so kind of they raised us to sort of associate everything country with being poor. And they were like, don't celebrate that part of your background, don't celebrate that part of your culture, like shun that stuff. And so as I got older, it resonated to me in a different way.
I love that you share that story. And I think there are so many things about your story that I relate to in my story. You know, I grew up sort of rural, but always had a real love for the urban culture. So a little, you know, almost reverse of your experience. But I read this on your bio and I thought, oh my gosh, no wonder I thought he was cool. My dream was to get out and go to New York. I wanted to get out of Kansas. I wanted to go to New York. I wanted to be a big TV host and be in the entertainment, the showbiz world. And so I want to touch on that a little bit because I understand that at a young age, you did get out. And I want to know how that experience sort of influenced, you know, what you're doing today.
Yeah, that was kind of wild. I played football in middle school and high school, and I was really, really bad at it. I was big, you know, I was like 6'1", like 200 pounds, fast, but I couldn't catch. I wasn't aggressive. I was just like, I had poor balance. Like, I just was miserable at football. And so the opportunity came up in high school to try out for the school play. It was a play called Three Murders and It's Only Monday. It was like a whodunit kind of crime thing. And so I was like, well, if I get in the play, then I don't have to go to football practice anymore, because I'll have to go to play practice at the end of school. And I went and I tried out, and I did a kind of accent during the tryout, and they were like, oh wow, that's brilliant, like, you got the part. I got the lead in the school play, and that led to me you know, getting into different programs with like professional theaters, playwriting programs. I ended up getting cast in a professional production of Lord of the Flies. And then that led to me getting an audition for an acting conservatory in New York. And I tried out for that and got in and got a full scholarship, you know. And by the time I was 17, I moved to New York and was living in the Upper West Side of Manhattan and training like full time to be an actor. Like, it was just like the movie Fame, you know, we were dancing in the subways and just wearing leg warmers to class. And, you know, I had all theater classes. I didn't have any like standard college classes. I was just like doing like stage combat and ballet, and I took a clown class and heroic acting and all of this stuff, and was just as broke as you could ever imagine somebody being. Like, I looked broke. I had a big afro at the time, and it was like lopsided, and I didn't have any money for, like, I didn't have money for toilet paper. I was like stealing toilet paper from Barnes and Noble and bringing it home. Like, hardly had any money for food, was living off of the McDonald's dollar menu, but like was just loving it, and had that's a pun, but had really good friends, really tight group of folks, and learned a lot about, you know, how to carry myself, how to present myself, and really became curious about sort of the human condition. I really liked to play villains when I was an actor. And I found that, like, to play a good villain, the person that I wanted to play the most was Captain Hook. Mm-hmm. And to play a good villain, you really had to understand why the person did the things that they did. Why was Captain Hook so anti Peter Pan? Why was he so anti this sort of youth fantasy? And why did he sort of value commerce above all other things? And for you to really like create a rich character that people would empathize with, and that was like really well-rounded, you had to understand like their full background. You had to mm-hmm. understand how they got up to the moment that you're playing. And I carried that curiosity through all of my work, through my, you know, regular job, and now through photography. You know, it's the same kind of curiosity about like what the question I asked everybody that I interview is, like, how did you get into this? You know, like, why are you a bull rider? Why are you a steer wrestler? Why do you do that to your body? Like, mm-hmm. I just am phenomenally fascinated by why people do the things they do.
And I think that's what immediately attracted me to you and to your story, is I love storytelling. I live and just it makes me whole, you know, telling stories and learning why people tick the way they do. And, you know, I think about your story and I think about my story, and I'm drawing comparisons. Ivan, I grew up, you know, in little old Tonganoxie, small town Kansas, on a little farm. My grandparents had a large ranch operation. I ran away from it because I felt like if people knew that I was a little cowgirl from Kansas, I would never succeed in television and entertainment. I felt like if the big dogs in New York, the agents, the other TV hosts, the household names that I was starting to work with, if they knew where I had come from, that they would write me off or that they wouldn't take me seriously. But what I discovered with age and maturity and, you know, traveling and having lived in all these different places is that it's the cowgirl is actually so special to me, and that it's something that I want to embrace in all that I do. And I read in your story that your narrative sort of on your upbringing and Kansas City being associated, you know, with maybe crime and growing up poor meant, you know, you came from the country. I read that your narrative started to sort of shift after you went to a rodeo in Oklahoma, and I actually went to Oklahoma State. So tell me a little bit about when did the narrative start to shift for you, and what was that like defining moment where you were like, wait a minute, these are stories worth telling, the story of the cowboy, specifically cowboys and cowgirls of color.
Yeah, it's really amazing the overlap that we have in our stories. Like I definitely had that shame of my upbringing and of my past, and I mean, acting school like exacerbated it because it was like, I went through like accent training and they were like, you say wrestling and you say pin and you say all your E's are all jacked up, man. So they beat my accent out of me and forced me to stand up straight and all of this stuff that was sort of part of the culture that I came from sort of got removed. And so I ended up working as far away from anything Kansas as I could. I worked in tech and I moved out to Portland, Oregon and was like working in digital advertising, you know, making ads for Nike. And was just like working at a computer and just had these really soft hands and my vision got bad from being at a computer all day. And like, was doing photography on the side, just as like a hobby. I was doing street photography and I met a guy at a party, this filmmaker named Charles Perry. And he, we got to talking. We were the only two black guys at the party and we got to talking and he was like, oh, I'm doing a documentary about black cowboys. And I laughed at him because I was kind of like, you know, still hadn't made that connection in my head that I'd grown up around black cowboys. Was thinking like cowboys were John Wayne, cowboys were like the Marlboro man, you know, it's like the archetypal, like sort of white dude on a horse that you see in films. And, he was like, nah, man, he's like, this is like a really like, you know, serious, like legit culture. You need to come with me and you need to see this. And I was drunk at the time and I said, yeah, sure, man, I'll go to Oklahoma. I'll go to Okmulgee. In the middle of August, I'll do that. And I went home and I bought my plane ticket and flew there. You know, it was 105 degrees. I couldn't breathe. There were chiggers biting at my ankles. And got out the car at the arena and was just like stunned by the amount. There were thousands of black people there, thousands of black cowboys and their trailers and they were, you know, loping around on their horses and in Jordans and basketball shorts. And, you know, all the women were just bedazzled from head to toe and long acrylic nails and braids. And there was music that resonated to me. You know, there was music that sounded like home. I met people from Kansas City. I met a man named Robert Criff, who lived right behind the 6-acre field from where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And he has a whole like riding club that he runs out of there. And it's a quarter mile from my house, you know? And he knew my grandmother and he knew my pastor and we went to the same high school. Like, and he told me that probably half of the people at this rodeo come down from Kansas City for their family reunions every year. And so it really was this just sea change moment in my perception of home, away from a place of like you said, poverty and violence and urbanity, to a place of like all of these black cowboys and all of these riding clubs. It just made me really curious about my home and to go back and view it through a different lens. And it made me really proud of the place that I was from and really proud of the part of my identity that I kind of like shoved down for so long.
Oh man, I feel that. I just feel that, you know, that pushing the identity away. You know, for me, it was this real struggle because I wasn't the traditional like cowboy hat wearing cowgirl. I didn't have horses anymore. I was living in big cities. And so I just really felt like, okay, I don't cut it as a cowgirl. So like, I can't embrace that. But I wasn't the same as the people that I was working with in television and entertainment, because at the end of the day, no matter how hard I tried, I could not take the cowgirl out of the spirit. You know, you can't take the cowgirl out of the girl type of thing, I guess. And so I just relate to that, man, so closely. I branded what the way I sort of relate to it as fancy lady cowgirl. You know, I can be a fancy lady living in the city and working with people in New York and being friends with people of all different cultures and ethnicities and still be the cowgirl from Kansas. And I think that that's really what, you know, you discovered when you went to that rodeo, and you sort of then transitioned, and now you basically like, are you on the road all the time, sort of traveling with cowboys and cowgirls? Like, what does your day to day look like now as a photojournalist?
I mean, I'm definitely not a cowboy at all. I've tried to wear a cowboy hat. Somebody told me I had it on backward. You know, like I'm not. I'm not a cowboy, and I don't try to pretend to be one. Mm-hmm. I wear sneakers when I shoot. I wear like Timberland boots when I shoot and sweatpants, and I'm like comfortable. And I think people really appreciate that about me. That I'm not a poser, and that makes them curious about me, because I'll go to a rodeo and be the only person there without jeans on, and they're kind of like, "What are you doing?" You know. I'm comfortable, you know, I'm going to be on my knees. I want to be rolling around, you know, shooting under the buck and shoot. So like, I'm going to be cozy. Life now, you know, I still work a day job. My job is extremely flexible and gives me a lot of license to sort of do what I do, because rodeo season from like June to October, I'm on the road a lot. I'm on the road, you know, kind of every weekend, and it's starting to be that I travel even earlier than that. Like I've been on the road this year probably 6 times already. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of the black cowboy culture where I live in Portland, so I have to go to Oklahoma, I have to go to Texas a lot to sort of meet folks. I just got back from Wickenburg, Arizona, where I was photographing a retired bull rider, Charles Sampson, rodeo legend. He's the first black man to win the NFR in bull riding. And now he competes in team roping. And I was just down there hanging out with him for 12 hours. And he threw me on a horse, you know, he threw me on his horse Pete, and was like, ride around with me. And I was like, all right, I'm not a good horse rider at all. I only do it when I'm photographing somebody and they make me get on a horse. And, so I'm riding around, I'm wearing Jordans, I'm wearing sweatpants, and a ball cap. And, one of the stock contractors comes up to us and is like, "Hey, I need you guys to come in here and wrangle these steer." And I'm like, "I don't know how to do that. I'm not comfortable. You know, I'm like, I'm going to get off of this horse." And Charles is like, "Come with me, come on." And we go into the field, and there's about 60 steer there. And he's like screaming at me that I'm in the way. And
oh yeah,
go to go. You know, I get in the right position, and the steer are trying to run past me. And he's like, "Don't let those steer by you." And I'd been around steer enough that I was like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And they all ran into the pen. So I felt really, really proud of myself. So I just get a taste of the lifestyle. I really enjoy it. And then I come back home to my condo and do city stuff.
Hey, you know, I think we need more people like you. And I love that you have no problem sort of embedding yourself into the very, very traditional when it comes to cowboys and cowgirls, and then also, you know, maybe the not so traditional, because that was one of the things that I sort of discovered through my journey. You know, I would call myself a cowgirl. I mean, I rodeoed, I grew up on a ranch, I did all of the things. But what I discovered is the minute I left and was living in a big city or working in a job or an industry that wasn't traditionally agriculture, people kind of wrote me off. They were like, oh, she's not a cowgirl. Look at her shoes. What is she doing? And so I just think that you, people like you, are so crucial to the cowboy and cowgirl culture, because we need people like you and people like me who, you know, we don't live it every day. Like you said, I'm in my apartment. They're jackhammering currently. I hope you can't hear that. I thought really of all the times to do construction naturally. You know, I sort of hang out in my city apartment, but I think you embody a lot of the things that make a cowboy special and the cowboy spirit. And so I would just, you know, from everyone in this culture, I say thank you for what you're doing. And Ivan, I want to know, you know, you've hung out with some cool guys. Some of them I know, you know, Keyshawn Whitehorse, Zeke Mitchell, some of those PBR guys that I've had the pleasure to work with. Who's like your, have you like hung out with anybody that you just think, oh my gosh, I had no idea that you were this type of person, or like, wow, this person really embodies the cowboy or cowgirl spirit in a totally surprising way? Do you have any like, just like cool stories from hanging out? Cause you're hanging out with like all the coolest people. I was going through your list and I was like, man, he's friends with everybody I want to be friends with.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I've got so many stories. Like I just collect them and I try not to tell them because I'm like, those are their stories, mm-hmm. but I just can't help myself sometimes. One of my favorite is who you mentioned is Keyshawn Whitehorse. He's a really, really awesome guy. I met him at the PBR finals and I was just like, I didn't know anything. That was the first PBR event that I'd been to, was the finals in 2018. And he won Rookie of the Year that year. And I just saw him and I was like, who is that? I was just like in the locker room hanging out. And I was like, who is that guy? Because he was like putting on his like silver, like turquoise bracelets. And he was, you know, darker than everybody else that was there. And they were like, that's Keyshawn Whitehorse. He's like, you know, one of the only Navajo bull riders on the circuit. And I went up and talked to him and he was really, really kind of shy, but I was like, hey dude, I'm not going to get up in your business. I just want to like take some pictures of you. And I took some pictures of him getting ready and talked to him a little bit. And he started telling me about his hometown, which doesn't really have a name. He calls it McCracken Springs, but that's like completely made up. It's just like his hometown is like coordinates, because it's mm-hmm. in the absolute middle of nowhere and on Navajo Reservation in Utah. And he started telling me about these three sacred mountains that surround his home. He lives kind of in this valley and started talking about the land that they live on and how they're rich in land, even though they're not rich in money, and how he grew up and his aspirations of bull riding kind of lifting the family all together, you know, that he hopes to like ride bulls as long as he can and then become a stock contractor and all of this stuff. And I went home and just kind of kept thinking about his words and thinking about like his approach to bull riding. One thing that he said was that he really partners with the bull when he rides. He doesn't try to dominate or own the bull. He like prays with the bull beforehand. And I've seen him do it. He touches the bull really softly before he gets in the chute and says a prayer. And he says he prays with the bull that they both perform well, because a good performance like benefits them both. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, just his, that gentleness and that spirituality and all of those elements just like moved me so much. I got home and was like, I got to get to McCracken Springs. I have to go to his hometown. And I started pitching to ESPN, like, you've got to do a story about this guy. And, luckily they picked it up and they funded the story, and I got to travel to see him perform in Green Bay, and I got to travel to see him perform in North Dakota, Bismarck. And then I flew with him down to his hometown, and he just sort of showed me around and you know, showed me his training at home and introduced me to his grandmother. And it was just an amazing, you know, we went to Monument Valley, which is about 30 minutes away from his home. And I was really moved by that. I'd never seen that. I didn't really know anything about it. And yeah, just sort of seeing a different approach to bull riding, a different approach to a bull rider away from someone who's just all machismo and all domination and all spur the bull. And they're just like jacked up on rock star energy, to seeing somebody that really trains like a professional athlete and takes care of their body and does like really like plyometric exercises and just does the sport differently than I've ever seen.
Oh, that's so neat. And yeah, gosh, Keyshawn is just, even if you don't know his story, when you're in his presence, just like you were in the locker room, he sort of just like puts off this peaceful and unique aura that you sort of can't help but be attracted to. And gosh, how neat. And you know, the fact that you really invest in the stories, it absolutely comes through in your photos. You know, when I look at your photos, I mean, you really have a knack for capturing, I guess, sort of the essence of that person's character. And you just do such a great job. And one of the things that you said really resonated with me, I think I read this on your website, but this has been something that's been very important to me with my Fancy Lady Cowgirl brand, because I think, man, I look at how I felt like an outsider in my own community. And I don't want anyone else to ever feel like that. And so I've really tried to build a brand that's sort of all inclusive. And I love this. You said a cowboy is a fluid figure represented by many races, cultures, and genders. And it's just so beautifully worded. And I just want to straight up point blank ask you, what does being a cowboy mean to you or look like to you? How would you sort of describe that?
Yeah, I've been writing about it a little bit more. I wrote about it for Wrangler because it was what was on my mind. Wrangler's been really a great partner to the work, because they, a lot of times brands come to you and they're like, here's a creative brief, you know, execute to this. We're going to send a creative director to the shoot, and we want the clothes to be sort of represented in this way. And we want you to get these shots at this place. And Wrangler has been like, do whatever you want to do. We want you to do what you do for us. And so they featured me in a story recently, and I was like, what am I going to write about? You know, because I've told my story a few times, and I was like, I don't want to tell that same story again. And so I wrote about, you know, what it means, what I've learned about cowboys in my journeys, in my travel. And I would say the thing that I've seen is that, you know, no cowboys are the same. I've seen cowboys that, you know, were really straight laced and Christian and, you know, how you would expect them to be, really buttoned up, polished, starched. I've seen cowboys that just got out of jail, you know, the day before the shoot, because they got arrested driving 110 miles an hour to go see a girl somewhere. You know, I've seen cowboys that are moms. I've seen a woman that was doing trick jumping, 10 days after she gave birth, you know, like, I've just seen such a large swath of humanity that like sort of sum it up. What a cowboy is impossible, because there are just so many different people. There are Democrats, there are Republicans, there are people that drive. I just shot a cowboy that runs a cowboy museum, and he pulled up in a Lincoln. And I've seen people in, you know, dualies pulling trailers. I've seen cowboys. I've seen a steer wrestler who doesn't have a truck or a trailer. He borrows a horse when he competes. There's a guy named Ronnie Davis who lives in Oklahoma, and he pulled up to a rodeo to do Pony Express racing in a Porsche. He pulled up in a Porsche Boxster, popped open the trunk, which is in the front, and pulled a saddle out of it, you know, and he had on a tank top, and he had like long braids, and he had on shorts. And you tell him that he's not a cowboy, you know, because he's as cowboy as they come. And so what I've summed it up to is it's a set of like principles. It's just a way of like living your life. It's like having integrity, you know, doing what you said that you're going to do. It's about, you know, how you connect to other people. You know, you look at every man the same and you look at them with respect and you treat people with dignity. It's about having grit, you know, staying at it until the job is done. And, you know, just these principles and the way that you live your life, I think make you a cowboy. I keep saying, you know, over and over again, as much as I can, I am not a cowboy. I'm not a cowboy. And my wife is like, you kind of are though. She's like, you kind of do cowboy stuff all day. You come home covered in dirt and your boots have manure all over them and you own like, you know, four cowboy hats and you've got the boots and like, you know, basically every cowboy on the circuit by name, like you're pretty close, dude. Like, I think all you really need is a horse and you're there.
Ivan, I'm totally going to take the side of your wife. I absolutely agree. And, you know, the big thing behind my brand, I'm super into like high fashion and the inspiration that I, you know, gained when I lived in New York and places like Europe and sort of like these very non-traditional cowgirl looking things. And so I always argue it's not the clothes that make the cowgirl or the cowboy, it's the way you live. And you just described all of the principles and you uphold those. So I'm just on record right here. You're a cowboy. I called it. I make the rules on this podcast. So for this podcast, you are a cowboy. Ivan, before we wrap up, I just want to sort of see what's next. You know, you're doing such cool things and, you know, you're really singularly focused, as you had mentioned, on expanding the cowboy to include people of color. So what does that look like? What's the future look like? And how do you hope to sort of shift the narrative, the cowboy narrative in that respect?
Yeah. One thing I've been accused of, I have critics, which just blows my mind, is a like sort of trying to push white people out of cowboy culture. Like somebody said that.
Oh my god.
Went off on me and was just like, you're trying to take away what white people have, just like they did. And then he blew up his argument. And he said, just like they did Jake from State Farm.
Is this real life? Were you being punked?
No, this is true. I've had this conversation a couple of times with people like coming onto my Instagram and being like, oh, you know, white people are cowboys too, you know? And I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. There is nothing wrong with the white cowboy and with white cowboy culture. I mean, white folks should be really proud of that part of their identity. And they have every right to do it and they're going to do it as good as anybody ever has and ever will. And I love that. And I don't think a thing about it needs to change. Mm-hmm. My only aspiration is to amplify the voices of people that aren't included in that sort of imagery a lot, and to say like, yes, and there's also this culture over here, so check this out because it's cool. And so that's my only aspiration, is to add to, not take away from. I think to do that, like my goal is to just like saturate the world in imagery. I mean, I post a large amount of imagery. I have thousands and thousands of images of the black cowboy. And I think the more that people see it and the more people read these stories and the more that they hear about it, the more it becomes normal. I want to get to the point that like people aren't like, you know, articles in newspapers and stuff are still saying like, the forgotten black cowboy, or black cowboys do exist. And I'm like, let's move past that, mm-hmm. to the point that like we already know. And now let's talk about Charlie Sampson, because he's an interesting human beyond the fact that he's a black cowboy. You know, that's one thing that I'm not doing so much of in my writing. I've done a bunch of stories recently and I'm not really talking about like, oh, they're the only black competitor in the entire PRCA in their sport, you know, or this athlete hopes to be the first black that competes in the NFR, you know. I'm moving beyond that story and just saying like, here is this individual, here's who they are, here's why you should care about them, here's why you should root for them. And just letting that kind of be enough without like sort of weighing it down with the historical context of Black cowboys and the magnitude of them, you know, sort of competing in a white sport. I think at this point we already know that, and it's not really that interesting. I think for as far as what I'm looking forward to in the next like few months, I've got a bunch of folks that I'm going to meet. I'm going to meet a farmer named Isaac McFarland, he's going to show a cow, and I'm going to take pictures of him showing a cow at a competition. And there's a family down in Arizona, down near the Mexico border, that I'm going to go photograph. They just started ranching. They were personal trainers, and they just moved them and their four kids out into the rural parts of Arizona, and they're raising cattle and ranching. And I'm going to go down there and photograph them and meet them. And I'm really excited about those stories, where the work is going a lot more. And what I'm excited about is that it's moving away from rodeo a little bit. I'm still going to go to rodeos because I love them, but I'm getting closer to like, I'm going into people's homes, mm-hmm. and staying with them a little bit longer so I can get more comprehensive stories and get a little bit more intimate with the work. I think that's really needed. Where I'm headed with all of it long term is that I want to make a book. I want to make a book about the Black cowboy, and I want it to just be like really beautiful imagery that you can kind of have on your coffee table and enjoy. And then part of that journey is this year in May, I have my first solo museum show at the Buffalo Bill Museum of the West in Cody, Wyoming. And I'm going to have about 40 images in that show of Black cowboys. And that'll be a really popular show, you know, during the rodeo there and during the travel season this summer. So excited about everything that's coming up this year. It's going to be a busy year. It's already been a busy year, and we're just going to keep the train moving.
So cool. You're doing such cool stuff. Okay, so you mentioned McFarland. You're going to go to a cow show. This doesn't happen to be the McFarland family, Isaac, Daniel. I think that's who you were referring to. Yeah. So I heard that and I was like, okay, don't shriek, but I'm so excited because I actually grew up showing cattle with them, and Daniel was closer to my age, and oh my gosh, one of my favorite humans ever. And you are going to go and just want to never leave. I keep waiting for them to extend the invitation to just like adopt me into the McFarland family. We get a Christmas card, which is always like a highlight of my family's Christmas. But I just keep thinking, oh my gosh, if they would just ask me to be a member of their family, I'm available. So, you know, Ivan, if that gets brought up, be like, yeah, Courtney said that she would be down to like be part of the family. They are so wonderful. And I am so excited.
He's such an interesting dude. I bought, you know, some of his clothes, and I think he really fits in your lane where Isaac is. He's like a fashion guy, model / cowboy, you know, like farmer type dude. So he really just like sits right on the border of a bunch of different identities and won't let anybody define him.
Oh my gosh, he is so cool. And it's so funny every time I see pictures of Isaac, because the Isaac that I know and remember is like this little boy running around in little like muck boots at the cat. Like he was like the, you know, he was the little brother. He was the, and I just look at him and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so old. Isaac's an adult like man, and he's modeling, and it just makes me laugh every time I see it because he's so grown up. But Ivan, oh gosh, thank you for everything you're doing. And I just want to circle back quickly to the beginning of what you said in this last little bit of the conversation. I love that for you. It's not about he wants to be the first Black cowboy, or he wants to be the first, you know, model / farmer or whatever. And in fact, when I reached out to you, I thought, oh man, I hope I just saw your story and thought it was cool. I didn't really care if you were purple, pink, blue, male, female, whatever. And I know it is Black History Month, but I thought, man, like, I just wanted to talk to you at any point. I just wanted to tell your story as soon as I could because I think it's so cool. And so I really appreciate that you brought that up. Like, it doesn't need to be, oh, and you know, they're a part of the conversation too. It is, you know, it needs to just be one fluid conversation. And so I loved that you said that. You are so awesome. If you need an assistant to go see Isaac with you, I'm available probably. I'll check my calendar, but you know, just know you've got that. But this has been so wonderful and you're awesome and you are a cowboy and you're doing great things for the cowboy culture and beyond. Thank you for joining.
You really made me feel great about myself today. I appreciate it, and I'll take you up on that assistant offer for sure.
Oh, I love it. Ivan, thank you for joining the Cowgirl Problems podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.